Health savings accounts can be a great way to save on medical expenses and reduce your tax liability. Money goes in tax deferred, and it's there when the doctor's bill arrives. But is the HSA a good deal for everyone? To even qualify for an HSA, you must have a high deductible health plan. And even then, it may not be the best move. Financial planner and teacher Rob West tells us who will get the most out of a health savings account. Now, today's broadcast is pre-recorded, but we do have some phone calls all lined up that I think you'll find very interesting and informative. I'm Steve Moore. Great you could join us for MoneyWise Live. So, Rob, I think I'm a bit confused here. I thought if you qualify for a health savings account, because you have a health plan with sky-high deductibles, then an HSA is the way to go, right? Are you saying that's not always the case?
Well, first of all, we really like HSAs if you can qualify them. They're a great way to accumulate tax-deferred savings for medical expenses, and many financial advisors say they're as good or better than some retirement plans because at age 65, the penalty for using the money for non-medical reasons goes away, but money used for medical bills is still tax deferred. So they're a real win-win.
But not for everyone who has a high deductible health plan?
Well, here's why some advisors think that's the case. They break down eligible folks into three groups, one where HSAs work great, one where they're just good, and one where you'd be better off without one.
Huh. Okay. Well, let's start out on a positive note. What group of HSAers are in the great group where it works best?
Well, these are the folks who don't need to tap into those funds right away on short-term health care. That allows them to stockpile the cash for retirement. It's such a good deal that some advisors will actually tell you to pay medical bills out of pocket so that you can just let the money in your HSA keep earning for retirement. This group typically has low medical expenses and rarely reach their health plan deductible. They're also young and can accumulate more money over a lifetime. By the way, you can contribute up to $3,450 for an individual and $6,900 for a family, plus an additional $1,000 for people 55 or over. So this group can maximize their HSA's potential by investing the money in mutual funds or stocks and not spending it. They're not like flexible spending accounts, so the money keeps rolling over from year to year and earns interest.
Because in some flexible spending accounts, you lose the money if you don't use it, right?
All of them on the FSA, yes.
Okay, all right. Well, that sounds good for folks in that group, young, healthy, able to contribute to the max. But what's it like in the next group where an HSA is only a good idea?
Yeah, this group actually makes up the majority of folks who have health savings accounts. They have to tap into the account to meet their medical expenses. In fact, 55% of HSA owners exhaust their total balance every year.
And an HSA is still good for them?
Well, yes, because they're able to take advantage of tax savings. The money they put in and use for medical expenses is tax-free, so it's still a good deal, even if they can't use the account to build retirement savings.
All right, so there's one more group left here, people who are eligible for an HSA but maybe shouldn't have one?
But for this group, it's not the HSA that's the problem. It's the high deductible health plan that they have to begin with. Those plans mean you'll be paying $1,350 for an individual, $2,700 for a family in medical expenses before the plan kicks in. And even then, you're still paying 10 to 40% of covered services in most cases. Now, if you're meeting these deductibles and still paying a lot out of pocket every year, or know that you're going to meet them in the next few years, a health savings plan is like using a Band-Aid when you need a tourniquet. What you really need to do in that case is get on a more expensive health plan with lower deductibles.
All right. Well, that's great information. But how would an HSA actually be better than a conventional retirement plan after age 65?
Sure. If you withdraw money from a retirement account after age 59 and a half, you're taxed on it, but you don't pay a penalty. You can use the money for anything, but you do pay taxes on all of it, no matter what you use it for. With an HSA after age 65, if you use the money for non-medical expenses, you're taxed, But at that age, you'll probably have more medical expenses than you would earlier in life. And when you use the money to meet those medical expenses, well, it's tax-free. And that's how it's better than a conventional retirement plan. It's called a double dip.
All right. We may have given people a drink from a fire hose here. Great information, but a lot of it. Check with your local people at your place of employment for all the specifics that pertain to you. We'll be right back.
Would you like your life to be infused with joy? Would you like to interject an eternal dimension into even the most ordinary day? Author Randy Alcorn says you can. When you discover the treasure principle. In a concise, power-packed style, this newly revised and updated book offers a six-step plan to finding the immediate pleasure and eternal rewards of the treasure principle. And once you discover it, life will never look the same. The treasure principle is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Our friends at Sound Mind Investing have been helping Christians reach their financial goals since 1990 with step-by-step guidance for investors just getting started, making choices in a 401k, or getting ready for retirement, all grounded in God's Word. The SMI slogan is Financial Wisdom for Living Well. More information is available online at soundmindinvesting.org. The SMI website also includes articles about common money management and investing topics. soundmindinvesting.org.
It's the Sunday morning service. We're approaching the crucial halfway point. One person in the congregation is just holding on. Let's take a look inside his subconscious.
Captain, we just can't take any more. His memory banks are completely worn out. Attention span is shot. I can only give you half impulse power.
But Scotty, we need more power. The sermon lasts for another 20 minutes.
I'm sorry, Captain. I'm doing all I can just to maintain his life support systems.
Is the Bible too much for your memory banks? God wants you to understand His Word. That's why He wrote it down. The Bible contains the key to eternal life. So spend time in God's Word, and then tell others about the only way, the truth, and the life, Jesus Christ.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian credit counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian credit counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
Welcome back to MoneyWise Live, where timeless wisdom meets today's financial choices and decisions. This reminder, we are not live today. We are pre-recorded, but we have some callers all lined up in advance. I think you're going to enjoy the calls, enjoy the conversation, and probably come away with something very practical to apply to your own finances. Let's go to Miami, Florida. And Janae, what's your question for Rob?
Hi, Rob. I have a question. My husband and I are both, we're on our budget, we're on a financial plan, and we're trying to decide whether we should pay off my student loans before we start tackling our mortgage. We're currently on the debt snowball, and we're almost done paying off our car. So okay. We want to know what's next.
Yeah, I love this question because as we look at the MoneyWise pie, which you can see a visual on that at moneywiselive.org, just scroll down three quarters of the way and you'll see that we allocate money to living, giving, owing, and growing. And in level one, we want to have a spending plan. We want to start giving. In our debt area, we want to pay off high interest credit card debts. And then we want to save for our emergency fund, $1,500 while we're paying off the credit cards, ultimately 3 to 6 months expenses. When we move to level two, we want to move toward consumer debt. And I like the idea of you paying off the car and then perhaps taking that monthly payment and then start putting that in savings specifically allocated to your next car in a way that's going to allow you to replenish that over time. And we want in our savings or grow category, we want to start saving for retirement 10 to 15% as a goal. The next step would be, as you look toward other debts, if you have student loans, I would go there next before your mortgage. And here's why. Typically, it's a higher interest rate. If you're itemizing, you can deduct the mortgage interest. Thirdly, it's usually a smaller balance, so you can pay that off quicker. And when you do, that money is then put back into your budget versus your mortgage, which is going to take a much longer period of time. You're not going to see the benefit of that money being freed up to allocate to other things. So I would attack your student loan debt first, Janae, and then I would look toward that mortgage and accelerate that. At the very minimum, look to put one extra payment a year. But if you can do even more than that, we'd love for you to certainly have that paid off by the time you retire, if not before. There's a lot of information there, though. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. So we should be saving along the way. We have the emergency fund. We have the emergency fund, and we've been putting every extra dollar into debt, to paying off debt.
Okay.
Should we be saving and investing in the meantime as we're paying off the consumer debt?
Yeah. Are you contributing anything to retirement at this point?
Not at this time.
Okay. And tell me about the options you have there. Do you have access to a 401k?
Yes, we will. My husband will be having access and very soon to the 401k, and I'm currently at home with my children.
Okay, very good.
So we have one income. I'm still trying to, do this the right way.
Yeah, is he going to have any matching available, Janae?
Yes, there is matching.
Okay. I would take full advantage of that matching right now, even while you're paying off debt. Now, if you had credit card debt, I would say don't do it. But given that he's got the matching there, that's 100% return on your money as he puts it in. So I'd take full advantage of that and then really focus in on that student loan debt. Once the student loan debt is paid off, I would try to get your retirement contributions up to 10 to 15% of his take-home pay, even if that means you're not going to pay off the house as quickly. Because remember, compounding works most effectively over a long period of time when you're consistently investing, which is called dollar cost averaging. So let's start taking advantage of that match in the 401k as soon as that's available, and while we're paying off the rest of your student loan debt, and then let's bump that up to 10 to 15%, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
All right. Thank you for your call today. God bless you.
Thanks, Janae. Let's go up to Music City. I go there two or three times a year, stand on the street corner, wait to be discovered. Never happens. But George, nice to have you with us today. What's on your mind, sir?
I, by the way, Steve, I would throw a dollar in the hat if I walked and saw you.
Would you? If you walked by
maybe
and I was there strumming?
Yeah.
So far, people have just asked me to stop. So I'm taking that as from the Lord. Hello, George. Nice to have you there, sir. How can we help you?
Well, thank you, Steve. I'd much rather have you on the radio continuing to help people like me handle God's money's way. So
thanks.
I'm glad I haven't seen you on the street.
Thanks for bursting my bubble, George. But we'll try to help you nonetheless. That's just the kind of guy I am. All right, buddy.
What's your question? Thank you, too, Rob. I learned so much from your show, just even that last call with Janae. And it's interesting because I and my wife have been working through what may be an antiquated money map now that I'm hearing about this new pie. So my question kind of comes from that angle in that I called in this show a number of months ago asking about whether we should hold on to a rental property or not. And In your infinite wisdom, Rob, you said that we should go ahead and sell it. And we just closed on it the last week. And by God's good grace and sovereignty, we came into a lot of money. And so we have worked our way quickly through destination 1, 2, and 3. And so now we've got about 40 grand remaining to kind of pour into what was and is destination 4 and 5. And so I was wondering what maybe the best attack would be. And all kind of the big points in destination 4, those of which are safer kids college, our retirement, save for a business, and save for major purchases. Those are all factors that, our family are involved with. And then we also have an existing primary mortgage, which I know kind of dips into that destination five. So, we are just wondering what the best use of that money would be. I know you just talked to Janae about dollar cost averaging.
Sure.
And then, you know, just so if I've given you enough information, what do you think?
No, that's really helpful. Let me give some context to our listeners, George. And what George is talking about is what's called the Compass Money Map. Our good friend Howard Dayton, the former host of this program and regular contributor at Compass Finances God's Way at CompassOne.org, is just a wonderful ministry. And we rely on their books and the Navigating Your Finances God's Way small group study. And they have a really helpful resource called the Money Map that tells you what your objectives are at each of seven destinations on your way to true financial faithfulness. And what George is saying is that he's arrived at destination four, which means he's already got his emergency fund of 3 to 6 months expenses. All consumer debt has been paid off, his car loans, student loans. He's using a budget, he's giving, and all credit card debts are paid off. So that's great. Let me ask you, George, are you contributing right now to a long-term retirement plan?
Well, so much like Janae, we have tried to build a little more organically that emergency fund, we pretty much put that on hold. Now, my wife recently went back to work, and she's putting 5% into her retirement plan. And I've recently asked her to check in with Human Resources to see if they're matching any of that.
Okay.
I don't know the answer. But I also have a Roth IRA. My wife has a Roth, and she also has a traditional from a rollover from a previous job.
Okay.
But we have not been giving or investing at all into that currently.
Okay, very good. Well, I think that's really your next priority, is to try to get that up to that 10 to 15% target of your overall income between you and your wife combined. If they're matching, I would include that matching in that 10 to 15% because that's money going into retirement savings. But that would be your goal, whether that's through additional contributions to her 401k, retirement plans you have, and or contributing to the Roth or the traditional IRA. Second thing is make sure you have whatever resources are already in retirement accounts invested properly. So depending on how much is in those IRAs, in some cases you may want to combine them if it's two traditionals or two Roths, and then make sure you're invested properly according to your goals and objectives. And if you need some help with that, our friends at soundmindinvesting.org would be a great resource. What is that long-term major purchase savings that you talked about?
Well, we both have some vehicles that are in six figures, and I assume that at some point they will not be worth repairing. So I was thinking that we would go kind of headlong into that and just put aside a fairly liberal amount for that. So that's
okay.
The more immediate in terms
okay.
of long term. Yeah.
Well, I like that. And you do need to be saving to replenish that fund. But I think the key is your time, you know, being able to save over time in compounding inside that retirement plan, especially with the tax deferral, is really critical. So I think that's where I would focus next, is trying to get that up to that 10% target while you're saving for the car fund, and then ultimately up to 15% is really where I would head from here. But it sounds like you all are doing a great job, so congratulations on your hard work. Thanks for your encouraging comments earlier as well, George. We appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, George. You guys really seem like you're heading in the right direction with God's blessing, and always nice to chat with you. You're listening to MoneyWise Live. He's Rob West. I'm Steve Moore. You're you, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. Don't call. We're not live. We're pre-recorded, but we will be right back.
Even in these uncertain times, you can replace fear with hope. And Michael Blue's new book, Financial Hope, is a hands-on study to help you do just that.
A short assessment will show you exactly where you are now. You'll then unlock the four ages of biblical financial wisdom and put your action plan in writing to transform your finances. Right now, request your copy of Financial Hope when you support MoneyWise Live with a gift of $25 or more at moneywiselive.org.
Hebrews 4:12 says, "For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword." Here's Beth Moore with a quick word.
If I turn the promptings of the Spirit into the paralysis of analysis, where we cannot even operate because I say, was that God? Was that, where I just had an idea come through my, okay, was that God? Was that God? Was that God? Okay, by the time I'm freaking myself out, it's not God. I dismiss it. That everything you ever do, shouldn't you fast? 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 Until you weigh 60 pounds. The enemy puts you in bondage. God does not put you in bondage. God's not coming after your physical health. You are his temple. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm not saying we don't deal. Ooh, let me back up from that. I'm not saying that we do not have illnesses that are not to bring glory so that God can show his glorious power. I'm not saying that. I'm saying this kind of thing, just destroying the body, on our own self-inflicted destruction, that is the devil and that is not God. And you see how we can get that. Oh, that can become such a compulsion to us that we can't, if the enemy knows that that's kind of could be a potential stronghold, he'll begin to put that. By the time we're turning what we thought was a spiritual prompting into an obsessive compulsive frenzy, back off from it. Back off from it. That's not God.
Beth would love for you to tune in each Tuesday night for Bible study. Class begins at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 Central on TBN. Maybe you had to miss a Tuesday. No problem. Go to BethMoore.org. That's BethMoore.org. You can watch the latest episode of her television program and more. Again, that's BethMoore.org.
God cares a great deal more about our money than most of us imagine. In fact, Jesus says more about our use of money and possessions than about anything else, including both heaven and hell. In Managing God's Money, author Randy Alcorn breaks it all down in a simple, easy-to-follow format that makes it the perfect reference tool if you're interested in gaining a solid biblical understanding of money, possessions, and eternity. Managing God's Money is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
It's MoneyWise Live. We're here Monday through Friday at this time. We love chatting with folks all across the country. Reminder, today's program, we are chatting with lots of folks, but we're not live. We're off today, and so we're pre-recorded, and we do what we normally do, which is line up callers well in advance. We're pleased with that. We're pleased to go to Baltimore, Maryland now. And, Rob, let's say hi to Carol.
Carol, we're so glad you've called today. How can we help you?
Hi, I was listening the other day, and you were talking about not using credit cards. I use my credit card. I pay it off every month, and my credit card company gives me a rebate at the end of the year.
Yeah.
The advantage is the money I get back, and also it's not taxable because it's a rebate.
Yes. Yes, that's right. And Carol, you bring up a great point. I think what you're referring to is on a recent program, we talked about an exercise that a good friend of ours did where he went cash only and used the envelope system with specific envelopes for certain discretionary categories to see if he would spend less. And the net result, even after the rebate, was that he did. And his conclusion was that the reason that happened was he didn't want to part with the money. And so when he actually had to hand over cash, he concluded that there were certain purchases that he just opted out on because he didn't want to give up the money and pull it out of the envelope. Now, does that mean we should never use credit cards? Absolutely not. We actually don't say that. What we say is only use credit cards in the context of a balanced budget and use the card for budgeted items and take full advantage of any rewards or rebates you get, especially if they're cash rewards and you're not paying any kind of annual fee of any kind, which I'm sure you're not. So I don't have any problem with the way you're doing doing. And I think it's just important to recognize that when we use cash for certain things, some may find, in fact, many may find that they'll actually spend less than even the rebate just because of the emotional connection we have with our cash. Does that make sense?
It sure does.
Yeah, yeah. But I appreciate you sharing how you handle things. I assume, Carol, you live on a budget. Do you have a written plan?
Yes. Well, I'm retired, so I have to be real careful with what I do.
Absolutely. What system do you use? Do you track it on a spreadsheet, or do you use a smartphone app, or do you have an envelope system? How do you do it?
Well, I check my balance in the checkbook. I check everything. I have my own system of what needs to be paid every month, and that's first, of course, and giving
it
first.
Excellent.
Yes.
That's great. Well, we appreciate you weighing in on the program today. May God bless you.
Thank you very much, Carol.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. God bless. Yeah, see, it's people like Carol really that don't have the kinds of problems we talk about a lot, which is people who just don't feel it when they use credit cards, and so they tend to overspend, and many people just don't have a budget. It's kind of flying by the seat of your pants, but you know, she's well organized, and organization really is key, whether it's the shoes in your closet or what's in your wallet, right?
That's exactly right.
All right. Hey, Rob, I've got an email question here from Rita. She says, "Dear Rob, my name has been on my son's credit card since he began college. He is not a spender and has been saving to buy a house. We'd both like to take my name off the card. Would he have to cancel it and apply for another card? Would that lower his credit score?"
Yes. Well, Rita, what you're likely going to find is that the lender is not willing to take you off the account. Keep in mind, as soon as they drop your name off, they're going from two people that they can rely on to make sure the balance is paid down to one, which is not in their best interest. Keep in mind, you can, in fact, close the card, and assuming he has the credit score and the income and the ability to qualify on his own, that would be the very best way for you to accomplish what you're looking to accomplish, and that is for him not to be attached to your card, but for him to have his own credit card that he takes out in his own name. Will that lower his credit score? No, it shouldn't. If he has an inquiry, that may temporarily lower it. But I think the key is make sure you're an on-time payer and you keep your utilization low, under 30%. I would say better yet, pay it off in full every month and tell him the first month that he doesn't, go ahead and cut it up.
All right, great information. That's the voice of Rob West, our host, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. Visit our website. It's a brand new updated website. Looks pretty snazzy, we think. Check it out at moneywiselive.org.
Investing is more than just returns. It's an expression of who you are and what you value. Does the way you invest your money reflect your identity as a Christian? At Eventide, we design investments for performance and a better world, so you can invest with the confidence to reach your financial goals while remaining true to your Christian values and commitments. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More is available at investeventide.com. That's investeventide.com.
Christian Healthcare Ministries enables believers to meet their healthcare costs affordably, biblically, and compassionately. It's not insurance, but a voluntary cost-sharing ministry based on the biblical example of Christians sharing each other's needs. And members aren't fined under the law for not having health insurance. Christian Healthcare Ministries might be your health cost solution. Call 800-791-6225 or visit chministries.org.
The Moody Radio Verse of the Week is found in Psalm 91, 14 through 16. "Because he loves me, says the Lord, I will rescue him. I will protect him, for he acknowledges my name. He will call on me and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With a long life, I will satisfy him and show him my salvation." That is Psalm 91, 14 through 16, the Moody Radio Verse of the Week.
We all long for something good, true, and secure. There's a hunger for a hope that goes beyond politics and entertainment and reaches deep into our souls. That hunger can only be satisfied by Jesus. For more than 90 years, Moody Radio has faithfully delivered that message of hope to millions so they can take the next step in their walk with Christ.
Call 1-800-DL-MOODY or visit moodyradio.org.
Buying a home is the largest, most nerve-wracking purchase most of us ever make. It doesn't help that you're entering a maze of unfamiliar words and confusing options that can leave you intimidated, frustrated, and afraid you've been taken advantage of. Navigating the Mortgage Maze by Dale Vermillion helps you clear up the confusion, unrack your nerves, and make the best mortgage decisions possible with confidence. Navigating the Mortgage Maze, available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. Minneapolis has agreed to ban chokeholds by police and to require officers to try to stop any other officers they see using improper force. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio says the latest night of protest over the death of George Floyd were largely peaceful. De Blasio says the 8 p.m. curfew, though, will continue through Sunday as planned. U.S. forces carrying out two sets of airstrikes against the Taliban in western and southern Afghanistan. The strikes were the first following a brief ceasefire declared by the insurgents for a major Muslim holiday last month. Stocks closing out the week with a bang after a closely watched report on the jobs market surprised investors, employers adding 2.5 million jobs in May. The Dow gained 829 points today. The Nasdaq ahead 198. The S&P tacked on 81. This is SRN News.
It's MoneyWise Live, where we meet each day to talk about the Bible and your money and what God has to say about managing it well as a good steward. Let's go to Cleveland, Ohio. Hello, Jean. What's on your mind today?
Hi, how are you?
Wonderful, thanks.
Good. I am 62 years old in 2003. Oh, thank you for taking a call, and I absolutely love the program.
Oh, you know,
probably get a lot of good information from you guys daily. But I'm concerned about the real estate. I bought a home in 2003. In 2008 through 2009, there was a real estate crash, and the property values just plummeted. I bought the home for $127,000, currently owe $90,000. The interest is 5.1%, and I did talk with the county auditors and had them to reappraise the house because they were appraising it at lower value, and they only went up a couple of thousand. Our house is outpricing the houses around us. They're not comparable, so there's no equity. And I don't know what to do with the house. We do love the house, but other than letting them foreclose on it, even though we're not behind, I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Help me out with the values again. You said it's you owe about 190, is that right?
No. Okay. 90.
You owe 90,000. And what do you believe it's worth?
I believe it's worth about 115 at least. And it's, you know, with the crash and whatnot, but the auditor's office appraised it at $69,000.
Yeah, but the assessed value, Gene, is really not what it's could be sold for. So what you would need to do to determine the actual value of the home is probably get a broker's price opinion from a local real estate broker, or you could engage a realtor to actually do a CMA, a comparative market analysis, and really help you determine what's the likely value of the home if it were to be sold, which is going to be different and higher than what the county assesses it at for property values and taxes, because that's really the value. value here, and it could be that it's more in line with that 115 that you think it's worth, which would mean that you have about $25,000 in equity in the home. Beyond that, if you're not planning on selling it and you can afford the mortgage payment, then, you know, it doesn't really matter what it's worth today because you're going to continue to live in it. So tell me about that. What does your budget look like, and are you able to make the mortgage payment and cover all of your other expenses?
Yeah, the mortgage payment is not an issue. It's actually $848 a month.
Okay.
So, right. So I'm not behind, haven't, you know, ever been behind, do meet the monthly bills and whatnot. I have about 5 months worth of emergency savings.
Great.
If need be. But my husband talked about refinancing, but it doesn't make sense to refinance to me, because the interest rate that we have now is 5.1%, and what would that do? Would that just put us in a longer time frame for the loan?
Yeah. Well, a couple of things. I wouldn't be terribly concerned about the equity position, because it's, again, likely that you're either at a good position where you are even in terms of what you owe versus what it's worth. But what's more likely is that it's worth more than what you owe. So you're not upside down. Number two, you're able to afford the current mortgage payment. That's a good sign. And I would say just continue on. It may make sense to refinance it, because if you have good credit, potentially you could get it down to around 4%. And if you could save a point, then I would be inclined, as long as you're planning to stay for at least 5 years and you don't extend the term, meaning that if you have 15 years left on this mortgage, you're not going to get a mortgage of more than 15 years. That may, though, even with the lower interest rate, push your payment up over what you're able to afford, and you would need to look at that. But if you could afford the payment, you don't extend the term, you plan to stay in the house, and you can save at least a point, then I think it may make sense for you to refinance. But at the very least, I would just sit tight and continue making that mortgage payment and just be encouraged that you have a home you can afford and that you love.
Gene, we appreciate your phone call today, and we certainly hope that that helps you as you work through this. Thanks very much. Time for one more, Chicago, Illinois. Maya, what situation are you facing?
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I am wondering, my husband and I are trying to get our finances in order. I've been listening to your show for just a couple months now, and it's been helping a lot. But we have some debt to tackle, and we're wondering where to just allocate our money, where to prioritize. We only have about 1 month of emergency savings for our daily living expenses. We have a car debt at a low interest rate. It's a little over 4%. We have a mortgage, and we have student loan debt. And the student loan debt is really, it's currently $81,000. It's at like a 6 point. There's a few different loans compiled together through the government.
Sure.
The highest ones are at 6.8. Most of them are at 6.8. So the interest alone every month is like $420 that it's accumulating.
Yeah.
But because it's such a large debt, we just don't know where we should. Should we prioritize? One option we looked into was refinancing the student loans. The fear in that is that with the government, if you have a financial hardship or something like that, you can, you know, postpone payments. But if we go to a private lender, that's no longer an option.
Yeah.
But if we do refinance, the interest rate would be lower. And instead of 30 years, it would be 15 years payoff.
Yeah.
But the payments would go up a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah.
And we're worried about whether or not we can sustain those.
Yeah.
So we're
well, Maya, I appreciate that background. That's really helpful. I would say, first of all, be encouraged. I mean, you're doing the right things. You're thinking about the right things. I love the fact that you've got this 1 month in your expenses and your emergency fund. Let's continue on a systematic basis to try to increase that. I would like for you to start contributing to a 401k if you have any matching, so you can take advantage of that. But keep your budget really lean, and let's continue to focus on the student loans. I'm with you. If you have to raise your payment, even though you're bringing the interest rate down, with giving up the flexible repayment options that the government offers, that would make me a little nervous, because if you had a disruption in your income, something unexpected comes your way, you wouldn't have that to fall back on even as a temporary stopgap, and it could really create a difficult situation for you. So I'd stay the course, even though it's difficult. At times it can feel like, are we ever going to get there? Just keep trusting the Lord, be faithful in your giving, diligent in your savings, keep your lifestyle in check, and just continue to attack those student loans. Snowball those debts, if you can, from lowest to highest balance as well.
Maya, thank you very much. We'll be right back.
Romans 15:13 says, "May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him." Michael Blue's new book, Financial Hope, will help you find that hope and peace. This hands-on study will show you the four H's of financial wisdom to help you apply the power of God's Word to your finances. Right now, request your copy of Financial Hope when you support MoneyWise Live with a gift of $25 or more at MoneyWiseLive.org.
This is Barry McGuire. I'm a car guy, and I'm here to help you understand God's purpose for your life through the eyes of a layman. Our churches are full of overachieving Christians lacking joy in their lives. I know, because I was there, giving generously of my time and resources and loving on my pastor without having that bounce in my step. I knew something was missing, but had no idea what it was until I met Herb Ellingwood. In the space of an hour with a man I didn't know and never saw again, my life was radically and forever changed. God brought Herb into my life to ignite my life with his razor focus on this one thought. God's called all of us to seek and save the lost, that none should be lost. That's why God sent his son to this earth. And when God's purpose for dying becomes your purpose for living, your joy will be full. Your job is to ignite revival outside the walls of your church by moving everyone every day closer to Jesus. If you need help doing that, go to ROTW.com.
Before sheltering in place became a thing because of the coronavirus, a lot of us would retreat into an emotional shelter.
We're trying to get away from something and we don't know what it is.
Billy Graham.
And many are trying to flee from reality, flee from their home situation or their business situation. But many of them, without knowing it, are actually trying to flee from God. He sees that you're trying to run and flee, but he loves you. And he has a plan for your life if you'll only turn. You don't have to keep running. Just go to the cross. And in the cross, God has provided everything that you ever searched for and ever wanted and ever longed for.
You can find all that by surrendering your life to Jesus Christ. We can tell you more at findpeacewithgod.net. That is findpeacewithgod.net. From the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association.
Do you know the 7 things not to do with your money in uncertain times? And would you like to know the 10 ways to trim your budget amid the current pandemic? You'll get those answers and much more when you subscribe to the new MoneyWise e-magazine. You'll receive valuable expert articles and easy-to-follow advice. You'll even get access to exclusive podcast episodes. And your subscription is free. Get access to the MoneyWise e-magazine at moneywiselive.org/signup.
You know, you often hear us talk about counselors and people that can help you with your money, with your finances, with your budgeting, things like that. Certified Kingdom Advisors. You may be asking, well, where do I find all of that? Well, it's easy to find. In fact, even easier now than ever before. It's at the brand new updated MoneyWise Live website, moneywiselive.org. There are links to free resources, things like budget templates, things to get you going in that regard. radio archives, past radio programs. Also, how to find a certified Kingdom advisor in your area, wherever you are in the United States. And also how to connect with a budget coach at no charge. Again, all of that and much more when you visit our newly updated website, moneywiselive.org. Now, back to our callers, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Roy, we know you've been holding. We do appreciate that. And what's your question?
I have like over $50,000 in credit card debt. My house, I have like 21-something hold on it, a little less than 22. The house needs a lot of repairs right now. I would think maybe $50,000 or $60,000 to repair the house. I was wondering if I should try to get out a loan to consolidate my credit cards and try to fix the house. I'm not even sure if I can get all that money out of the house itself. I think I heard one time that it's not a good idea to make unsecured loan secure.
Right.
Well,
I appreciate this background, Roy. So $50,000 in credit card debt, and then with the $21,000 mortgage, are you able to meet your expenses on a monthly basis? Are you able to cover the minimum payments on all the credit cards, plus keep the mortgage current and all your expenses on a given month, or are you falling further and further behind and adding to that credit card debt?
Yeah, I'm adding to the credit card debt sometimes, and I'm self-employed, and I'm finding it more difficult to pay the credit card debt. Sometimes I'm getting late on them. My credit is still intact somewhat, but I'm finding that I'm finding it real hard to pay these cards, because three of these cards, I think it's over 300 and like 340, 360.
Yeah. Okay.
Each month, and most of that is interest.
Okay. Here's what I'd like for you to do, Roy, as a first step, and then feel free to call us back if you have further questions. We really need to solve for this credit card debt. That's really what's creating so much of this challenge. And if you're continuing to add to it, we're just going to make this situation worse. Let's put the repairs on hold right now, unless they're absolutely critical, like you're going to have further damage to the home because water's pouring in or something like that. And let's try to figure out a situation to get those credit cards paid on time and with the balances going in the right direction. The best way to do that is through a debt management program. I want you to call our friends at Christian Credit Counselors. In fact, if you have a computer, you can do it online, ChristianCreditCounselors.org. They're going to go through your budget with you. They're going to look at all your credit cards. They're going to determine how much interest they can save you, and they're probably going to be able to get those interest rates way down. You're going to pay a similar, maybe a little bit lower monthly payment, but it's going to be paid off 80% faster because you're going to have so much more going to principal on a monthly basis. The cards will be closed, but you'll be able to pay them off much quicker. And if we can do that in line with a balanced budget, get a little bit going to savings, even $50 a month, now when you have an event come up that you didn't plan on, or you have a little bit lower income in a month, you've got to build a savings account that's growing that you can tap into, and we're not going back to the credit cards. So let's start there. Don't refinance the mortgage. Call our friends, ChristianCreditCounselors.org, and then we'll pick back up with you if you have other questions at that point.
Right. We do appreciate that. We wish you the very best, and feel free to call us back down the road once you connect with those folks and they get you on some sort of a plan. If you have further questions, again, feel free to give us a call. Rob, Carol called us. She didn't want to be on the air. She's in Arkansas, and we're going to try to read her question. She has a grandson who's 2.5 that they opened up a mutual fund for. The birth mom refused to give them the young man's Social Security Security number. The birth mom wanted to be the guardian of the account and didn't like the fact that, they were trying to become the guardians. Is there anything better or is there something better they could do for their grandson? It's currently in her name.
Yeah, it's probably a POD account, what's called payable on death, and it's in their name, meaning it's their account. They own it outright, but at their death, he would receive the account, the grandson. One of the challenges with that type of account is that that money would go to him, and he'd be able to use it however he wants, depending on his age and level of maturity, spiritual maturity, financial maturity. It may or may not be a good thing. I do like the fact that they're generous and they're wanting to put this money aside for him, and they're doing it in a way where it's able to grow and accumulate. I'd recommend for Carol, Steve, a 529 plan. It would require that this money be specifically allocated to college, the cost of college, and the total cost of attendance. But it would give him the resources to be able to further his education. It could be done in a way where it's their account, but for his benefit, could even be put in the parents' name, but it would be for the son, and then they could contribute to it. The money would be invested, and then it would be something that would be a real blessing to him down the road. Apart from that, if they don't have his Social Security number, they couldn't do a Uniform Gift to Minors Act, which would be a custodial account, so they'd probably just need to stick with this POD, but I think the 529 is going to be the best option.
Okay. And Carol, we appreciate your contacting us today, and we hope that information helps you. Thanks so much. Rob, how about another email, okay?
Yeah, and let me just add one thing. That Social Security number is going to be an issue even for the 529. If they were to open it, they're going to have the Social Security number. So I think the next step is probably to sit down with mom and dad and just say, here's our heart. We want to try to bless him. We want to do something for him. We think college is a great thing. What do you think? And see if you can create some alignment around what you're doing and why, and see if they'd be willing to help you in terms of opening the account.
You know, we used to tell people just several years ago not to give their Social Security number for an ID. When you check into your doctor or just about anywhere these days that has an office, the first thing they want to know is what's your Social Security number. Are we beyond that? Is that almost impossible not to do or to not do these days?
I'm not ready to say that, actually. I would be very suspect about giving out your Social Security number to people that ask for it. You know, oftentimes your doctor, for instance, will ask for it, but it may not be necessary because, you know, even though they may say they need it and it may be for insurance purposes, I would see if there's a way to get around that. Because who knows where they're storing it and how secure that information is. You're, of course, going to have to provide it anytime you're opening a financial account. That's a requirement as a part of the federal rules and regs. But I wouldn't be volunteering that information. I'd be pushing back wherever possible.
All right. What works for me is when they ask for the number, I give them your number. And so far, I'm good.
Yeah, yeah, I'm glad I mixed up the digits when I told you that. Yeah, that's good. I think I gave you Rich's, Rich Rozzle's social.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So as a broadcasting team, we're just sort of passing it down.
Passing the buck, right.
Right. Ooh, passing the buck. I like it. All right, here's an email from Melanie. She says, I'm 66 years old, single, and in good health. I'm on a fixed retirement income and working part-time. I'm carrying debt of $36,000 from six major credit cards and a student loan. I'm making on-time payments above the minimum, and my FICO score is 706. Should I go to a debt management program or sell my home and rent a condo, or anything else you would suggest? She's 66 years old.
Yeah. Well, I think the key here is we want to try to get out of this debt as quickly as possible. You have a good credit score. That's great. You've obviously managed your financial situation well to this point. I think the key, Melanie, moving forward is how can we get out from under this? Certainly, a debt management program is something we like. That's going to help you pay off this debt, credit card debt, 80% faster, assuming you want to stay in this home. If you were planning on downsizing using anyway, then you might as well go ahead and sell the home, begin renting, get out from under the credit card debt in full, assuming you have some equity that you could put toward it, right-size your budget, be completely debt-free, which would feel very good. And then if you have a surplus at that point, you could begin saving up for the purchase of another place if you wanted to own something. So I think it really comes down to your plans for your living situation. If this really is your forever home and it fits in the long-term plan, then I would say a debt management program is going to help you pay off this debt much quicker. If you were planning on downsizing anyway, I'd probably do it, pay off the debt, and then you'll feel a lot better at that point.
All right. Well, we hope you feel a lot better from listening and for tuning in today. MoneyWise Live is a partnership between Moody Radio and MoneyWise Media, and we certainly appreciate their partnership and yours. Thanks so much for tuning in, for listening, for calling, and for telling others about us. If you'd like to send Rob West an email, make it brief, just a couple of lines, then the address is questions@moneywise.org, questions@moneywise.org. Our website is moneywiselive.org. And my thanks to Jim and Amy and Gabby T and Judy for joining us today and doing all the tech stuff behind the scenes. And again, thank you for listening. Have a great remainder of your day. Join us again next time.